Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. We've got a little extra for you this week ahead of the United game, which I'm hoping to release before the United game to give you some more extra Albion Obsessed content to listen to on your way down. So if you're listening to this before the United game, I've done a good job editing. So let's see who we've got on the podcast today. We are welcomed by Dagan. Dagan, how are you, mate?
Doing well, Joe. Happy to be here. Honored to meet with Clive.
Good stuff. Yes. So we do have Clive from the Fan Advisory Board on the podcast today to talk to us a little bit about what the Fan Advisory is about and also to see how you can apply to hopefully be in with a chance of joining the wonderful team at the Amex. So we'll get straight into it. What we do, Clive, on the Albion Obsessed podcast is when we have a new guest on, we like to ask them three Albion-related questions, which I sent you earlier. So I've done your homework. So, Dagan, I'll let you shoot off with the first one.
Absolutely. Clive, much has been made of my origin story as a new Brighton fan this year. So I was curious to hear about what was your first game experience like? Can you tell us about that?
I don't really know, which is perhaps a strange answer. So let me just – how long have we got? Just go back a little bit, I guess, in that – and I love hearing stories about people who their parents take them to their first game. It's a great experience and things like that. And I was really touched with Joe talking about your parents come together to go to the semi-final. I just thought, yeah, absolutely amazing. Well, my first football match was QPR versus Wealdstone. My father took me for my birthday. My father hated football. He hated all organised sports and sports in general, actually, participating, watching. He tried to leave early and we had a bit of an argument about that and I insisted on staying to the end, which he was then quite grumpy about because we had a long journey home. So probably not the great sort of introduction to live sport that that many people have, are they sort of, you know, absolutely falling in love with the atmosphere and everything about it. Although I did certainly fall in love with football and the atmosphere. And I grew up in London. I would say normally a Spurs fan, but didn't really go to Spurs very much. But we used to have this a guy who'd come into school on a Wednesday or Thursday afternoon and say, we are going to, and it would be Chelsea, Fulham, Highbury, White Hart Lane, QPR. And we would just go and ground hop around London because you could turn up on Saturday afternoon, you could pay your money at the turnstile and just walk through and you could watch football. So I had a sort of a love of ground hopping and watching sport and not particularly any allegiance to one team. And I say, you know, my stepfather, who was into football a bit, supported Spurs, so I became a Spurs supporter. Well, they were never used to go very much, so I carried on ground hopping. And then I went to university in Brighton in sort of 91, I think, 91, 92. And pretty much the same sort of thing. A guy said, oh, we're going to watch football. You know, oh, okay. And off I went. And, you know, not an avid fan, but we'd go three or four times a year. And yeah. To me, it's very much about being with some people, doing something on the day, and just, you know, enjoying that moment of some guys coming together, having a few beers and watching some sport. And the level of the sport. So I will, you know, famously go and watch anything. So, you know, non-league football. I just like going to football grounds, talking to supporters, and particularly away supporters, actually. Another sort of strange sort of quirk I've got. So no idea what my first game is. I know I did my last game at the Goldstone was because it was very much just as a bit of a sort of football tourist. And then I went back to London, probably late 90s, and kind of fell out of love with football. I think the stuff that was going on at the Albion got me quite angry about the sort of the goals and ground, all of that. But not, it didn't drive me into activism. It just drove me into like turning my back on football. I've had enough of it. And that included, we used to get a lot of England games, my wife and I at the time. And we just sort of gave up on football really and didn't watch it live or on telly, just went and did other things for a good sort of 10 or 15 years. And then actually when my children started growing up and I've got a son who's now 21 and it was the opportunity to first take him to football. And actually I wasn't consciously writing the wrongs of my dad was a lovely guy, just hated sport. But yeah, actually having that time together when we would go to football and, you know, more recently my daughter and I normally have started doing the 92. You know, we went to West Brom last year. Was it last year for the FA Cup? There's something magic about the sort of third round of the FA Cup. And yeah, you know, as a dad with a 14-year-old girl, spending like sort of, you know, a good 8 hours in the car, quality time, putting some of the football, it's just been absolutely magic. So those experiences are what's really great to me. But of course, over the last 5 years or so, the Albion's just sucked me along. So I was going for the football, I was going to see my mates, I was going for a pie and a pint, and I kind of fallen in love with football all over again. And what a time to be a football fan, what a time to be a Brighton fan.
Yeah, absolutely. You've sort of picked it back up where is best possible to pick it back up from. There's been some amazing players over the years as well. And the next question is normally quite a hard one for people to answer because there's been so many amazing players. But I'm going to pose a question to you now. Who's been your favourite Albion player since you've started watching them?
It probably would have been Bruno until he left. And that was partly because of where we sat, where we were in the sort of the family stand of the East Lower. And it was just something about watching someone plying their trade in front of you. And, you get that. I made a mistake recently because my business partner's having our tickets for the Man City game. So I thought, I'll go over the West Stand. And I've actually bought West-South tickets. So I'm going to be watching the same football I watch in the East-North section. I should have gone opposite the pitch as opposed to diagonally. So I think there's something about sort of sitting, watching players sort of playing this right in front of you. And the one as a family that we've always loved and always really enjoyed, and particularly the last couple of years, just seeing him grow, is Solly March. Absolute sort of hero of my kids. And probably not the best Brighton player ever. Probably, there's lots of it. And I actually had a bit of an argument with a Brighton fan in the pub at Forest the other night saying, like, how on earth can you beat Solly March? I said, well, that's who it is. I can't, there's no right or wrong reason, but that's just the guy that in our house, everyone is the go-to guy and we love him. And the season he's been having, scoring goals for fun. I mean, that picture when he sort of jumped up on the North Stand when he scored that goal, and just seeing that, I think, and the journey has been fantastic. So Solly for me.
Yeah, we are huge Solly March admirers on this, but well, I am anyway. I've always backed Solly to the hilt. Whether that's come with criticism because of his performances in the past, but he's always been that really integral player under so many different managers as well. So I think exactly. He gives 100% every time. Dagan, I'll give you the next question.
Well, if the folks at Albion Obsessed are obsessed about anything, it's football shirts. And so, but my question for you, I've been adopted into this culture, but do you have a favorite all-time Albion shirt?
I do, but I'm not a big shirt. I admire shirts. I love the stuff Joe does. I love the fact people design them on, but particularly being sort of, I'm not allowed to wear a football shirt where I sit. So actually, my opportunity to buy football shirts isn't that great and wear them. So I wear them at away games. I quite like the Hyperturk. I think that's a really nice shirt, particularly once I sort of realised the backstory about the sort of colours of the city and things like that. But my my actual favourite shirt is the Skint. I think it just it's got blue and white stripes and it looks like a proper blue and white. If you could take the logo off, that would probably be better. But actually the logo kind of makes it as well. It's sort of, it kind of reminds us where we come from and where we've been. And we don't forget that. So it's by a long way my favourite shirt.
That is a very popular choice. Tom will be watching this back and he will be so excited you picked that because he absolutely adores that shirt. I think he wore it to Wembley. I can't remember. Tom,
I did.
Correct me.
I bought that for Wembley.
You bought that to me. Oh, did you? Amazing.
I can't wear shirts in the lounge. And I thought, actually, I'm just going to treat myself to a blue and white shirt and wear
happy
it to
days.
Wembley. And now I'm going to burn it.
I'm a bit stuck for tomorrow because Clive has really, really nicely invited me to sit in the Sun Harvest Lounge. And he told me this morning, you're not allowed to wear a football shirt. That's all I have. So I'm going to go topless tomorrow, guys. So I'm sorry.
I'll put on a jumper.
Yeah, that's true. I'll find something, don't you worry. Right, where are we? So... those are the three questions we like to ask an Albion guest for the first time. But now let's get into the nitty gritty because you're here to talk about the Fan Advisory Board. So tell me a little bit about how you yourself got into the Fan Advisory Board.
A bit of one of those chances, really. I'm part of a couple of supporters of clubs, one of which is Seagulls over Burwash. And it's predominantly a travel club. So local village, runs two buses. Take about 130 people to the Amex for home games. Somebody on that was put themselves forward. They were going to go as the stand as a women's season ticket holder, and suggested to me it'd be a good idea as 1901 holder. You know, if both of us apply, one of us might get in, and that would be good because we could then support the travel aspect of our of Seagulls over Burwash, as well as doing all the good stuff at the fan advisory board. And the guy who did it is he travels everywhere with him. He's a real die in the wall Brighton fan, knows everything about the club. He didn't get in, and I did. Just by he stood on the ticket for the women's team, WSL team, which had quite strong competition. And actually, you know, the lady got it, rightly so. Whereas the sort of 1901 contingent, I think it was only two other people I was up against. And I quickly realised actually it was voted by all fans, not just by members of 1901. So I sort of particularly targeted the sort of North Stand, Twitter, Facebook and things like that, just to get a bit of campaign going. Yeah, having thrown my hat in the ring, then kind of got competitive and wanted to try and win. Which I duly did, and we were appointed about this time last year, actually. So I've been on the FAB for a year now.
Clive, you know, fan advisory board could mean a lot of things to a lot of people not knowing the inner workings. I dug into the minutes and looked at some of the good work you've been doing. But first, I'm really interested in hearing about the genesis of the fan advisory board, sort of what informed that choice, who was a part of making that decision. Obviously, there was an application process and a smaller pool brought in to begin with just five of you. Yeah. But sort of what was the genesis of the fan advisory board?
I think it was the Crouch report into the fan-led review. So, and you know, you have to sort of hats off to Brighton, really, in that they're always looking one step ahead, aren't they? They could see where things were going, and it's like, do you have things done to you, or do you do it yourself? So I think they could see it coming and sort of thought, well, actually, if it's coming and to be done to us, let's do it ourselves. And it's been interesting because both Tony Bloom and Paul Barber in public meetings. So, you know, I end up going to a lot of fans forums and meetings in pubs and things like that. And both of them have said that, you know, they welcome the FAB, they thank us for our input, but we don't think they're needed. You know, they feel the level of engagement that the club have with fans is high, and that, you know, that the requirement for FAB is probably not there. So, you know, it was a bit of a difficult, you know, our first meeting really with Paul was almost like, thank you for joining, but, you know, we thought you're not needed almost, which was probably not where we all felt we were. You know, hey, you got a new job and this could be really exciting and great. And that was then sort of, you know, tempered in further with the fact that a lot of the fans didn't seem to want us either. You know, we were seen to be old, grey, you know, middle-aged, not representative of, you know, other fans and groups like that. So, you know, kind of felt, well, the club don't want us, the fans don't want us. You know, what do you do? And yeah, what we decided to do was just try and get on and do the job we were elected to do, which is around. But because being first has been quite difficult because club don't know what we're going to do. We don't know what we're going to do. We don't know each other. We don't know how we work. None of the infrastructure there. It didn't have an email address. You know, there was kind of nothing there. And so there's been quite a lot in trying to sort of set things up and get things going, getting people to behave. You know, two members that were originally elected had to stand down. You know, they resigned, but, you know, effectively they were asked to stand down because you have to sign non-disclosure agreements and agree to act in a certain way. And pretty quickly they couldn't do that. So, yeah, it is a serious role. And I think there's a, you know, are we part of the club? No, you know, we're sort of independent from the club, but, you know, we sort of not. And it's, so we're trying to find out our place in that. You know, on day one, our very first meeting, we were like, can we have some younger members, please? You know, we just feel, you know, none of us are particularly social media savvy sort of guys and girls. And, you know, we felt it would have been helpful. And one of the criticisms was it's all old people. So, yeah, we sort of said to the club, you know, can we get some younger members on board? And they were, well, actually, no, because you look at the voting, you've got to go quite a long way down the list to get to a younger person. And that then kind of feels quite unfair to the three or four people in front of them. Unless you set out up front and say, we want someone under 30, it's very difficult to jump three or four members and say, well, they're going to appoint this person as well. Because, yeah, well, you know, one thing, they did want it to be a sort of a transparent and fair process. So, yeah, we've been about sort of setting things up, trying to get things going, trying to build a bit of credibility after two members had resigned. And probably the flag was one of those things, really, where it was a match day experience meeting. And I felt very much that Graham Potter had never really been welcome to the club. You know, a lot of people were still, you know, quite angry the way Chris Hughton had left and were disappointed with that, you know, who was Graham Potter. And it never really built into a, yeah, he wasn't welcome. You know, it was a slow burn, I guess, for me, sort of Potter, and I think with other people as well. And I was kind of saying at this meeting, well, how do we make the Zerbe feel really welcome on day one? You know, what can we do to welcome him? How can we, yeah, and the kind of the idea of a flag came up. And I almost felt the club was saying, well, yeah, but, the fans will never fund it. Because I thought, you know, my view was it needs to come from the fans. Yeah, the club are already going to pay him a load of money and all his advisors to come over. Yeah, paying the club buying a flag, that doesn't really work. And the fans were saying, well, the club will never let you do it anyway. So I kind of, oh, okay. There's nothing like people telling me I can't do something to then fire him up into doing it. And, you know, within a week of a sort of conversation, shall we do something? A flag was designed. It was voted for on Twitter. It was fully funded with the help of people like Joe, etc. And I think that was quite good because it started to build a bit of credibility. Oh, these people can deliver stuff, actually, and they can deliver some quite high-quality stuff in quite a reasonable way. So we've been trying to sort of build that credibility. We're a little disappointed, I think, with the way, you know, you mentioned you looked at the minutes where you've probably done more than most people have done. They're not very well structured. They're not quite as we've presented them. They've kind of felt like they've just been copy and pasted and stuck on a website. So we are in the process of building our own website, but, you know, we're having to fund that ourselves. You know, the club aren't putting any money towards that, which sort of feels a bit, I don't know, part of us feels if we fund it, it's independent and the club can't then put what's on there. But at the same time, you sort of think like, well, it wouldn't cost that much to say, here's a few quid, Clive, you know, here's a website, off you go and get on with it. So we're trying to find our place. We're trying to then also, you know, there's currently five of us. How do we actually get out and talk to people and engage with fans? Because I can sit on a Tuesday night on the sofa and tweet a few things in and out, and I can point people to the website, but it's really about how we engage and talk to people more and get people's views and get that two-way communication and be that bridge between the club. And that's our challenge. But we've really struggled to do that with the four or five of us that are left. So that's why we've been pushing for this much bigger recruitment. And the other part of that was we kind of felt, you know, we got a two-year term. And if at the end of the 2 years we all leave, all of a sudden the next group have got to come in and got to build from scratch again. And yeah, they don't know what we've gone through, what we've learned, what we can do, what we can't do. So, and actually, again, the club have overstepped. They sort of said, yeah, it made a lot of sense to recruit another bunch in a year in with a 2 year stint, and then there'll be some transition and knowledge sharing and things like that. So it won't suddenly fall apart every 2 years and be rebuilt and become a sort of a, you know, slightly odd group with different strategies going forward. So that was part of the planning behind that.
Something you were talking about earlier had me sort of thinking. That there might be a pre-made conception of who the fan advisory board are, what it's made up of, and what you're made to say or made to do by the club. So those people who have already made their minds up about you guys, what would you say to them to sort of change their minds on the fact that you guys are working for the best for the supporters?
I think come talk to us, you know. Come buy me a pint in the North Stand after a game someday, and, you know, I'll talk to you because... the club have not said anything we can or can't do. They've got views on things. And actually, when those views, you know, season ticket sharing, bottle tops, things like that, when those things are communicated well and professionally, we tend to agree with the club on a lot of things, which probably makes us then sound like we're almost lapdogs of the club. I think our sort of pushback to the club has been, well, yeah, when Paul Barber sits in the room and explains that in detail for me to 10 minutes, I can understand it. Where's that messaging to the rest of the fans? Yeah, we offered to video interview him and say, you know, do something like this and say, okay, bottle tops, season ticket sharing, whatever it be. You know, let's have that, you know, meaningful interaction with the fab, explain the process, explain how you've got to where you've got to, explain that we've been challenging you about it. But this is an inclusion you come to. And at the end of the day, you know, it's Tony's club. I think Paul does a very good job in stewarding us and getting us to where we are on and off the pitch. You know, so they're bright, sensible people. But I think sometimes some of the communication, the stuff they do around sort of, you know, YouTube and some of the Twitter stuff is great. But when it just comes to communicating simple stuff to fans, sometimes that gets a bit lost, really. And I think that's one of the things we'll try and challenge going forwards.
Digging?
So you mentioned the growth that's coming up. You mentioned obviously someone more youthful. Mm-hmm. What other skills, criteria, sort of what are you looking for our listeners who are out there wondering, would I be a fit for this opportunity?
Yeah, so we've put a personal spec together because we kind of felt it was, you know, certainly we didn't know what we needed, but yeah, it's that ability to sit in a committee meeting, yeah, you know, with a bunch of potentially eight or so other people, sit with some quite senior members of the club. So 3 weeks ago, I sat down with another member of the FAB and we interviewed the finance director about the accounts from last year. I think he was pretty scared. You know, are these people going to turn up and start asking about transfer clauses, people's salaries and things like that? You know, we weren't. We were just, you know, we'd read the accounts as a business person. We had some questions about how they operated, what the plans were going forward. So it's ability to attend a meeting, take some sensible notes, communicate that back to people and follow up on actions. So, yeah, stuff that a lot of people do in everyday life. Just being able to do some of those things. So if you've been on a parent teachers association or been a school governor or you've been on the scouts committee or something like that, and you've been used to working in those environments where you have to listen to other people, you have to give and take a bit. But we're all focused on the same thing and trying to sort of make the Albion a better place for everybody. So yeah, we've tended to sort of peel off into different subsections. So though we only meet the club about four times a year, we meet weekly as a group on a Monday evening. We have sort of a half hour Zoom call where we just quickly bang through actions. So you said you were going to send an email to the club last week about the pies. You said you're going to sort something out on transport. You're going to do that. I said I was going to go on Albion Obsessed and talk about the FAB recruitment. You know, have you done that? When are you going to do it? Yeah, are you following that up? When they say no, what are you going to do? And just so we just go through, it's about 20 lines long at the moment, and we just ping through that quite quickly and saying, okay, just to keep momentum up, because we sort of found at first we'd meet, we'd talk for an hour, we spend a lot of time talking about football and where we sat and the results at the weekend. That, yeah, that's great, but actually that's not probably what we're there for. So, just that sort of bit of business acumen in some ways of being able to take an action within 7 days, follow up what you said you're going to do, feedback to the group what you're going to do about it, but then also put your hand up and go, I'm out of my depth here, life's getting in the way, I can't cope at the moment, I might need to take back sleep for a couple of weeks. But yeah, I just think honest people that are prepared to give it a shot and help out, really, plus also some ideas people. I mean, Twitter and Facebook are no shortage of ideas, and it's, I suppose, probably trying to filter what are the good ones of those. One of the things I'm quite keen to do is put out an FAQ sort of thing where people are sitting there. We have lots of people come up with the same comments, the same ideas, going, yeah, okay, that's great. We've discussed that. We can't currently do that. But you can. One of the ones I get is, because I raised some money for a flag and got it printed and sorted out, every time there's an idea of a flag, it's kind of my flag. Well, I'd like to get the situation where anyone can buy a flag and trail it across the North Stand, providing it's not offensive and it fits within the brand of the club and all that sort of thing, then anybody should be able to do that. It doesn't have to be a member of the Fan Advisory Board. And actually the Fan Advisory Board should be a bit more strategic, I think. I'm happy to try and fund fags for Wembley and things like that. And we got involved with that. But it should be about, to me, having a policy that any fan who wants to bring a flag into the ground knows what that looks like, knows how kind of a pointy end on it, and it has to be a fireproof. That there's a policy on the website anyone can look at, can follow, and then they can just bring their flags as they want, rather than everything trying to come through me if it's got a stick on it and some material.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of the stuff that I've seen, heard and read and things like that had me thinking that this sort of, you're a very busy man, and I'd imagine that the people are on it with yourself are also very busy with sorting out questions and sorting out minutes and thinking about what you're going to ask a club, etc. And so should people applying for this be worried that it's going to take up a lot of their sort of already busy lives, or is it not as bad as it sounds?
It could be a full-time job. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It could be a full-time job. So one of the things we're quite keen to do is to try and get an intern. There's some football universities with somebody from Lisbon has written a report for the club, which we've had a copy of. Would we like to get them as an intern? And they could perhaps be a full-time FAB member for a year as a project. And what a great project that would be if you're going and studying your MSc or MBA in football management. As in management of a football club rather than being Roberto De Zerbi, although that'd be nice as well. It'd be great to get someone like that in. We'd like to form a disability. Brighton's, I think, the only Premier League team without a disability supporters association. Niraj, who's a member of the FAB, is actually in a wheelchair some of the time. So we'd like to do that. But actually setting those things up is quite involved. So I think it's also we've got to be able to say, well, who can we lean on? Can we take that? I sort of feel that the Disability Sports Association should be something we should encourage and lead, but I don't want to be sat on the chairing that in 5 years' time or being on the finance rep or the secretary or whatever it is. I think there's a need there and we need to try and fill that need, but I don't think that's about Clive doing that for the rest of his life. So time commitments, I suppose, back to your question, because I waffle quite a lot, is it's a half an hour on a Monday, which can be an hour, but we try and keep it half an hour. So every Monday, we try and keep that pretty tight. And then it's probably once a month meeting with a club, either on diversity, inclusion, this match day experience, marketing, wayfinding, whatever the season ticket renewal. So we got a bit of a chat with the club about season ticket renewal. We're involved in the transport survey. Going to be involved in analysing that and hope to talk about that with the club and getting the fans' view on that. So, dropping into the club occasionally for an hour or so's meeting, quite often on Teams. So flexibility around your day, self-employed or retired people is really good, because if you can manage your own diary, I imagine if you work in a factory and say, oh, hi, I'm just off to a fab call for the next hour, and the machine's got to turn itself for the next hour, it might be difficult. So, and unfortunately, it almost feels like you've got to be sort of financially independent now. As I don't want any money from Tony Bloom. I think that man has done an amazing job for our club. But I do recognise that there'll be some people who can't afford to fund driving to and from the Amex a couple of times a month. And actually some sort of subsistence to help people if they needed it might be nice to be available, but that's currently not the case. So, it's not a huge financial commitment. I travel to meetings because I like meeting people in pubs and chatting. I could also see how going to two meetings a month or getting on the train, driving my car across the other side of Sussex is a commitment. I choose to do that because I think if someone elected me to be a member of the FAB, then the best I can do is get out and meet people and try and represent them. That's how I choose to do it. So. A time commitment that's varied across the week, but probably, and then doing emails, reading reports, bits and pieces like that. Of course, you also then get sucked into the Football Supporters Association. We've had calls with other FABs. So there's all the Premier League FABs came together, a couple of representatives of that. So that was quite interesting. Very, very different skill sets across those. From some that had sort of barristers and QCs chairing them and really sort of bright people, to others that were just, it felt like sort of a half a dozen people that it got together. But it was interesting to listen to them and the journey they were on. And it is a journey for all of us, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So if people are listening to all of this and thinking, this sounds like something that I want to do, Dagan, the ultimate question is,
how do I apply?
How do you apply? Very timely today. We've been working on this for about the last 6 weeks. I keep saying to Joe, it's coming. And then today at about 5 o'clock, an email's out. There's links on the website. I've been tweeting those. I know you guys have been retweeting them as well. I've been sharing it on Facebook. So the information is there. The job description's there. But I think more importantly, we're all the current members of the FAB are there if people want to meet on Zoom, meet in a pub, have a chat on Twitter about, is it for me? Because I think one of the things we're quite keen to do is, we're limited to how many people we have on it. We want people on it. They're going to stick around for a couple of years. People's life circumstances change, and we all accept that. But if you're going into this thinking, am I going to have the time? Is it for me? Have I got the skills? Pick up the phone, drop us an email or something, and we can, I can chat and tell you about my experience of it. It can be frustrating not delivering all the things that you thought you might be delivering when you first, took the job on. It's been quite slow and boring in a lot of ways. You can get a bit blown away by visiting different bits of the grounds. We've been in the press conference, we've been in the Sky studio, and you do get sort of a bit swept up into that, but then actually you're talking about some quite dull things quite a lot of the time. So it's absolute honor and privilege, and I've met, I wouldn't be sat here tonight, I've met so many lovely people. It's been absolutely fantastic. I've joined a bunch of supporters groups that I'm going to continue, particularly Seagulls over London. Shout out to any of those guys or girls that are listening. Some really lovely fans I've met, and people stop me on away concourses and say hi and talk to me, and it's just lovely. It's great. Really enjoy it.
Definitely. And now a question that I see you get a lot, Clive, on Twitter, is all about the wonderful piece of material that runs across the North Stand almost every home game since it's been out. I think it debuted at the Chelsea game, if I remember rightly. So what people need for that, or what we need for that, is more people, because I've helped out with that as well, and I'm in the group chat that helps out as well, and we get it a lot where people are saying, oh, you've done this wrong, you've done that wrong, what about this, what about that? We need more people, don't we, Clive?
We absolutely do. So, sitting in the east, the club are very good. They got to get it going, they kind of granted me a pass so I could, like, leave my lounge, go down, help with the flag, and then come back. But they were sort of thinking, actually, we're not that keen on doing that. It needs to be run by people in the North Stand doing that. And I think that's right, really. It's that home end. Those are the guys and girls who should be organising and supporting that. But people are very good. And I've started to become a little bit punchier in some ways, in that people are very good at telling me how I should do it and how it should come out and how long it should come out for. But less so in, actually, I'm prepared to help. I'll get to the ground an hour earlier. I'll get it out of the cupboard. Once the game's kicked off and it's all getting very exciting, I'll help roll it up. All the really unsexy things. And I guess if you're thinking about being sort of part of the fab, the unsexy rolling a flag up at Charlton away when it was upside down as well, and then carrying it with my three kids back through southeast London for a lot, what I thought was a lot further than I actually thought it was. All those unsexy things, if you're up for doing that, and probably a bit selfish in those sort of ways, you're probably a better place than if you think you'll be picking the team in 3 years' time, because that won't be happening.
Yeah, exactly that. So anyone in the North Stand that's listening to this and wants to get involved with the flag, please make yourself known to me or Clive or Mark as well on Twitter, and we'll get you in contact with the right people. Obviously, Clive is the right person to get in contact with. And if we just get more people, then the flag can come out more and there can be more fan-led stuff that improves the atmosphere. So with your help, we can make it a better place to support the Albion for sure.
Absolutely.
Dagan, that's not all about banners, though, is it?
There are questions. What happened to the Wembley banners?
So the Wembley banners was that was interesting, wasn't it? It happened very quickly. So my grand plan was to have a giant crowd surfing flag that we could then cut in half and use at the North Stand, and the other half we were going to cut into meter squares, raffle it and get the players to sign it and things like that. So it became, we'd have a crowd surfer flag for home, and we'd have a memento. It always was a memorial, wasn't it? We'd have a memento from the day that people could raffle, auction, raise some money for the Albion community. I thought it was a really great plan. The only thing was, from the way the season's been a bit compressed, we actually had about 5 days to get something designed, approved by Wembley, and rolled out. So we decided we'd do the flag for the final, so maybe next year. What we did get was that we worked with an artist from Dogma, Jamie, and actually got a number of designs. I was very much about, it shouldn't be my choice. I'm not an artist, I'm not a designer, I'm not the best fan. So what I really wanted was people to be able to vote on it. So I'd like to put 10 designs out there, and then the fans, and we'd have to find a way of stopping Palace fans voting for the one that looked the worst. But we'd find a way that fans could vote for stuff. And it's, so it's fan designed, it was going to be fan funded, and it could then be fan chosen as well. But just the time was too short. So we got the banners designed. I thought they looked really great. we hadn't quite realized, or certainly I hadn't realized, that they're actually going to be out for about sort of 10 minutes because they got sort of dropped down. I think they look really good. And with all the blue and white flags going up, it, you know, the Brighton end looked really good. But, you know, just for kickoff, they got wound up and they've not really been seen since. It kind of didn't feel like it was a bit of a waste by how little time they'd been seen. It felt to me of a waste to then sort of chop those up. Do you really want a memory from that day as a, you know, a corner of a banner that doesn't? So we kind of thought that wasn't. So we've looked at working with the club around where could they be used in the ground? You know, could we put them somewhere around the ground? And we thought we found somewhere at the east stand. But the latest thinking now is going to go to the training ground. So at Lancing for the under 21. So there's not a lot of sort of Brighton stuff there. And I actually thought it might be a really nice way of just making that feel a bit more like home ground for the under 21s. So that's going to be happening hopefully in the next couple of weeks. Going to try and get the artist along who designed them to, you know, to unveil them and do a bit of media around that with him. So and that's, you know, it's such a great creative community in Brighton. So many really sort of great designers, content creators, so many great people to work with, and it's tapping into those and trying to get them you know, into the ground a bit more and doing stuff with the club a bit more is something I'll certainly like to try and do over the next year.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think the club are missing a huge market there, because there's so many of us out there that would are itching to be more involved with the club and create more content, and with their help we could go that extra mile in putting this club on the map in the YouTube terms or in the podcast space terms, and just push us even more, because there's so many like fan podcasts run by United fans, Arsenal fans, Chelsea fans, whatever, that, you know, seem to have that sort of access. So that would be, you know, one, incredible for us to be involved in that, but two, I feel like there could be a lot of positives for the club as well. So what we did, we put out on Twitter saying, are there any fan or supporters questions for Clive to take back to the fan advisory board, or any burning questions you may have had when the fan advisory board started? So we'll just kick off with the first one. And it is from Mick. And he asks if there's any plans to broadcast the US tour. Obviously, some of these you might not know the answers to or direct them to the website. But yeah, are there any plans?
Yeah, well, I had no idea, but I did Google it, and I think you said NBC have got the rights in the US. They're waiting to find out who the rights are going to be in the UK. So, yeah, as well as putting stuff on Twitter, you can put it into Google and find the answers, which I managed to do. So, yeah, and don't take that the wrong way, Mick. But I do sometimes wonder when people are asking me about, you know, what should I have in my sandwiches, and when I should take a drink to the ground, and what bus I should get, you know. Most of you hopefully are grown up and should be able to work some of this stuff out yourself. So, but no, the broadcast schedule hasn't been produced yet for overseas, but I'm sure we'll be able to watch it. It'd be great if we could maybe get it beamed back. I don't know what the appetite for that would be like, to get that beamed back to the ground and maybe watch it at the ground. I'm sure, yeah, they could sell a few pies and a few pints, and yeah, it might be a nice thing to do. So look, Dagan's going to now fly to the Amex to watch a game in the US. Yeah, how mad is that going to be?
No, I mean, I love the idea of, I went for the first time during the semifinal to DC to watch with other Brighton fans. It's my first time taking in a game. Paul was there with Stateside Seagulls and a few others, and it was fantastic. So I can only imagine, even if the game's been, you know, being played abroad, gathering everybody in the stadium would be electric. Yeah,
just watching football in the pub is better than watching at home on your sofa, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. So I have a question from Kevin. And it's sort of multi-layered, but the first part is, can the Fab consider supporting ways to earn more loyalty points? He feels there's a bit of a catch-22 at the moment, with folks with fewer points never reach the on-sale window. Possibly, you know, the possibility of earning points from buying MX guest tickets or other means. I guess is
really, yeah. So we have tried this one a bit. I tried it with Paul Barber actually as well. And believe it or not, and I probably do believe it, the season ticket scheme was devised by Tony Bloom, you know, as a mathematician and a business person. So it was his scheme, devised by him, and he sets the points and the way it's structured. So the chance of changing, I think, is quite slim. But at the same time, I think, yeah, if you look at the points thing, it's, there's some odd things in it, certainly, I find. For example, yeah, if you buy a season ticket on the 1st of September, you've got the same rights as someone's had a season ticket for a year virtually, or, you know, the other way around. So there's some, there's more nuances in there. But yeah, if you go back to the semi-final, everyone who's a member, a season ticket holder, got to the ground. Most people had the opportunity to buy a guest ticket. If you want to go and get 15 points on your season ticket, you can go and buy tickets for Newcastle. All right, it's a Thursday night and a Wednesday night. It only really becomes an issue if you want to get to London games. Yeah, most of the other games, Southampton, Leicester, you can get to without a huge season ticket, and you just have to build it up, as many people have. So I think Tony and Paul are very nervous about tweaking it. You know, it's there to incentivize people. I think what you will see increasingly as more grounds go digital, and there is a big push for Premier League digital ticketing, because at the moment it's quite painful. I think what you're going to see increasingly, and I think it happened at Stoke in the FA Cup when I went, you only got your points credited when you went through the turnstile. So there are clearly people who were once buying tickets and passing them on to anybody, buying tickets and selling them to people for profit, or buying tickets just to get the points and not turning up for the match. And increasingly, digital ticketing comes across the Premier League. You'll only get your points for your away matches when you go through the turnstile. So that will be a positive. It will stop people buying them just to get the points. So that will hopefully make the tickets more valuable and get, you know, more people to away games.
Yeah, I honestly think that the loyalty point system isn't flawed in any way. I quite like it. And as you say, a lot of games, Manchester games, Newcastle games, Southampton game, do go further down the line in terms of the window of availability to purchase. So it's just about people making that commitment. And rightly so, if people make that commitment, they get the points that they rightly deserve.
I had it with Liverpool this year, where I sort of took my daughter. We had a hotel booked for Liverpool away, and then the rail strike. And what becomes, what I tend to do is make a weekend of it. We have a weekend away, and we have a Saturday afternoon some football. We take in the city, and I love it. It's great. But then you get a rail strike, and what became a nice long weekend suddenly becomes an awful long time sat in a car. But to go to Anfield and get three goals and come away with a point, it was worth every minute of it, I have to say.
Exactly that. All those memories made for those long slog journeys, and much deserved for the Albion fans that go and do those journeys.
And how lovely the Liverpool fans were as well. I've everywhere I've been. Well, Forest were pretty good as well, but the amount of people that just came up afterwards and said, really well played, you deserved that, if not more. Just a really lovely city and really lovely people.
Yeah, there's nothing like mutual respect between a lot of people like the banter and like that, this, that and the other. But there's nothing like, for me anyway, the mutual respect between two sets of fans. But that's just me being a boring old fart.
It's a bit I love about where I've got four seats in my lounge. And the thing I love most is when I get a knowledgeable away fan. So I invite a Liverpool fan, a West Ham fan. My mate Gary comes to every West Ham game. And he knows his team inside out. And, he looks quite good. And so, you watch him from a corner, you watch this, you watch that. And you sit there and you walk away knowing a bit more about, the other team and the mutual respect you have for them. And particularly being West Ham, because we always batter them. So it's even better.
Exactly. I bet he really enjoyed that game. Yeah. The next question is from Sam. She asks, I think we've sort of touched on this anyway, but how did the club plan to enhance the match day experience as a whole?
So we've got a match day atmosphere group as part of the FAB. So we're looking at, there's a number of things that I think, I was quite keen on safe standing. The club kind of felt there wasn't a requirement for it. In fairness to them, they listened and we got the survey. I'm not sure the survey was worded exactly the way I'd liked, but it's kind of, I think in some ways I'd be a bit happier if they said, we're happy to do it, but it's not on the priority. We'd rather build the fan park outside. Yeah, that's where the next £2 million's going. And actually, most people would probably say that's a better thing to do rather than almost saying, well, fans don't want it. Because I think there are still quite a lot of fans that would like it or partially like it. So there is a plan, and I'm not giving away any secrets here. Paul's mentioned this in public meetings, to move the away fans, clearly not this season, maybe not the season after, but to move them towards the southwest corner. So they're not completely behind the goal. I think fans should be behind the goal. You know, away fans, I really do. I think it's part of it. You know, but I think the way sort of Arsenal, Tottenham, Liverpool have got it is probably about right. You know, you've got a corner, so you can get those behind the goal. So they're looking at that next year. I've got a meeting in a couple of weeks' time. We're going to be looking at more around what we can do around sort of flags and things like that. And I think more, if people have been to Leicester, they've almost got these sort of flags within the stadium. People just pick up and wave, which I think is great. Apart from I do go to a football match to watch football. And what I don't really want to be, you know, particularly with a sort of family stand not far in front of me, I don't want to be sat there behind someone waving a flag for 90 minutes. So it's trying to do things. I would have, my other sort of real hope for the sort of safe standing was not just safe standing, it was that we might be able to sort of potentially recut the north stand and get a singing section if people wanted it. You know, I think you've got to be, you know, one of the things I'd say if you're going on the fab, it's if you've got very strong ideas and agendas, it's probably not for you. If you've got the ability to listen, come up with some ideas and see if it's wanted, that's probably, but you know, I felt if people wanted to get together in a group, in a certain location, in a block, and be more vocal and stand the whole time, then we should be able to support and enable that. So, open to ideas really on atmosphere enhancing. I mean, I don't know what you guys felt, but I felt the atmosphere at the weekend was a bit flat actually for a 6-0 win. The atmosphere felt a bit strange to me.
It was almost like after we scored the fourth goal, it's probably almost like we just expected us to just do well and to score more goals, yeah, and to not have that within us to roar the team on for more. Because I found myself at 6-0 almost with my feet up thinking this will be nice if we get a seventh. And it just turned into a lovely spectatorship really, where we were watching probably the best football we've ever seen be played by a Brighton team, taking apart Wolves, who by the way aren't an awful side by any stretch, and they've had a decent upturn in form recently, whether they're on the beach already, but that's just an awful mentality to have. But we turned up and we absolutely ripped them to shreds, and I think it was just the fans sort of going, well, job done.
I mean, it was odd because I think there was a bit around the team selection that everyone was a bit, ooh, don't know about that. Then Undav's first goal was almost not celebrated because he was so convinced it was going to be, you know, offside of VAR. And, you know, and that seemed like an absolute age. And almost by the sixth goal, it's like, well, I suppose we better stand up again, really. We just scored again. It was, I feel a bit bad. The atmosphere should have been better on Saturday. No doubt we'll make it up for it tomorrow night because I think that should be a bit more. A bit more playful, wasn't there?
I was going to say, I think once we've scored our sixth goal against United, it'll go off. So hopefully. But Dagan, the question on everyone's lips is the next question you're going to ask, and I'm excited for this question.
I feel a lot of pressure here. Maybe I'll build the suspense further. I wanted to ask, and this is a fan question. This is me, but looking at the minutes, Clive, it looks like each of the main meetings, when there's not a specific topic, you guys are meeting with personnel from the club and sort of getting sort of a briefing on that person's role. This, like Adrian Morris in February, head of safety and security. And I was blown away to look at the minutes and look at the level of sort of their six direct reports and, you know, 400 club stewards and sort of just all the machinations of the club. And it struck me, you guys are navigating the space where hearing fan perspective, but also learning about the inner workings of the club in a way that fans typically wouldn't.
Yeah.
Is that part of the design too, to make you sort of the fab can be an educator of other fans who say, well, what about this? And you're like, well, actually this is what's behind it. Cause you've done that a little bit with sort of, you know, Tony being the architect of the point system, for example.
Yeah. So I suppose I'd probably take some of that for granted a bit actually. In that, you know, we had a catering committee meeting, you know, where you met the guy and you suddenly realise, and if ever you get to go in one of the concourses, two or three days before a game, I've got a picture of it, I'll share it with you, of all the cans of Coke that are sat there, and they've then got to be loaded sort of into the, and each kiosk can serve 1,000 people. Yeah, that's how it's designed. Each one of those catering kiosks can serve 1,000 people. They don't know how many it's staffed. Yeah, it was interesting to hear that the Brighton fans were the most polite of anywhere he's worked in football, concerts or cricket. He said they're just the nicest people. He said most places you pour a beer and there's head all over it, or it's lukewarm and they'll be swearing at you. Brighton fans say thank you very much, and could you just talk that possibly, please? Would that be all right? From sort of that end of things to the, you know, we've been too accommodating in the fact that you've got four different flavours of crisps. So you get to the front of the queue with a kid and go, what flavour crisps you got? What flavours are there? And then you read the flavour crisps out. If you just turn up and go, right, we've got salt and vinegar. You having salt and vinegar, yes or no? So by giving people more choice, it's making the queuing more difficult. And we've certainly noticed that with fan number, you know, attendance is at a record high this year. Yeah, there are very few empty seats. You do get them, and you know, midweek and odd games like that. But the number of people attending matches, and certainly in front of me, there's one empty seat in front of me. Well, I don't think there's been a single game this year where it's not been filled predominantly by a Japanese person with the whole Matoma effect. But the number of people attending does put pressure on it. But you're right, we're sort of, the club almost have to educate you to a level to know about stuff. Yeah, there's one that comes up probably once a month about why can't I use the escalator, the lift to get up to the West Concourse. There's a safety certificate that says how the stadium operate. And for the West, not the East, but for the West, you've got to be able to walk up there and walk back down. And the way you prove you can walk up and walk back down is by walking up there. If you get the elevator up, you can't prove that you can get yourself back down in an emergency. Now, again, 95% of people, when you explain that, and it takes about five conversations on Twitter or Facebook to do that, when you've gone through that interaction a few times, you go, thanks very much, I didn't know that. Oh, and by the way, once the stairs are a problem, you can transfer to the East, which is just as nice, where you can use a lift because the safety case is different. The same with the lift that goes up to the car park. There's one that's twice the size, but it goes straight into the media compound where there's cables trailing all over the place. It's not a public access place. You know, it's okay if people work there and expecting to fall over cables, but you know, a 90-year-old man or lady, you know, with a walking frame wouldn't want to walk through there. It's not very well lit. And there's a difference between sort of public safety and employee safety, isn't there? So you're right. We've ended up sort of going on this learning curve. And once our website is up and running, we're going to put some of these FAQs. So when someone says bottle tops, season ticket sharing, points, we can go, oh, actually, have you looked at this? And if you've looked at that, you've read that, and that doesn't answer your question, how can I take your grievance, your comments, your ideas forward? So that we're then really taking stuff forward that's meaningful, and I'm not sitting there just answering the same question, yeah, a dozen times.
So, yeah. Thanks for indulging me. All right, so without further ado, the big question, where on earth is Sammy the Seagull?
I don't know. What's happened here? Well, I missed something. I saw that question come up on Twitter. And
right, so basically, it's a running theme on Twitter that obviously Gully's still there, Sally is still there. These are the important questions, by the way, that Albion Obsessed ask, because we are just that way inclined. Sammy's disappeared.
It's an expose.
I think Sammy's been taken to the... Sorry, Tom, I know you're a vegan, but I think Sammy's been taken to the butchers.
The advantage of sitting in the lounge, which is quite comfortable just for kickoff, is I often miss a lot of the pre-match build-up. So the Sally Sammy argument, I've missed that because I'm sitting there supping a pint normally at this point.
Well, I think we're going to have to ask you to take that back to the fan advisory.
Yeah, I'll take that to personally.
On earth, yes, please. Where on earth is Sammy Seagull? Yeah, has he been sacked? What did he do to get sacked?
Watch this space.
There's one more from Sam. So that question also came from Sam. So there's just one more from Sam.
Sammy the Seagull or?
No, Sam was asking about Sammy the Seagull.
Yeah, are you sure he's not? Doppelganger.
She might be. Yeah. That might be what it is all along. But there's one more from Sam or Sammy, whichever way you want to look at it. Yeah. Is there plans to have more women's games at the Amex next season, as Crawley is too difficult to get to for many?
Yes. So I think there was a commitment around two games a season. The World Cup break and other things have made that more difficult this year. But certainly there is a desire to do that. Crawley is what Crawley is. I mean, I'm a WSL season ticket holder. I don't go to all the games, but I do go. It's not ideal, but at the same time, the Amex, and I don't quite understand it, but everybody tells me that you can't open the stadium for, you know, sort of 2,500-3,000 people. It doesn't work. It's an interesting sort of conversation we've put again. This is an open forum, Seagulls Over London. We've sort of doing a Q&A, sort of saying like, yeah, they're very keen to make it a paid product. It'd be very easy to fill the Amex with free seats. Yeah, say to it, local school kids, yeah, you can all rock up. It'll cost you a pound or something. You could do that. But then they all go home, and do they come back the next week and pay a tenner? So I think they're being quite strategic around the WSL, but trying to make people pay for it, to make it a product, to build it up. And that's going to take time to do. But you know, having games at the Amex doesn't make financial sense at the moment. So I think you're going to get those couple. And if anyone went to the one at the Amex, did you go, Joe, this year? Where they had the trophy there, they had some fan zone stuff in the back of the concourse. And I thought it was really well done, actually, I must say. And more of that would make it more attractive. So, Tony and Paul would love to sell the Amex out and fill it up for every WSL home game. But, we're a little way off that. I think the Arsenal game at Crawley, was that next week? I think that's sold out. So that should be good, you know. And, Arsenal this week had a record crowd and they're 60,000 for Champions League game. So, it's building. And, you know, as a father of two daughters, I think it's great. And, long may it continue to grow. But I think it would be great to have all the games at the Amex, but it's going to take a while yet.
Fair enough.
Will there be a return of player signing sessions at the shop?
I don't know. It's the sort of thing we can ask, but the popularity of players, you know, I think from where we were, you know, when the Amex opened and, being a very, you know, whereas now we've got a World Cup winner. I mean, you know, how mad is that? And what a lovely chap he is, because he stopped to sign my kids' stuff and have a picture with them the other day. You know what, absolutely love. And with all the Brighton officials were trying to say no kids, that he's trying to get in his car, and he goes no, they want a picture, come on. And so they had a picture with McAllister, and he's absolutely loved. And he's been through my the other nice event. And if you're not in a rush tomorrow night, Joe, stick around, because the players' lounge is at the back of the Sun Harvest Lounge, so the wives and girlfriends and mums and dads all sitting there, so the players all come to the lounge. But even that now has become, you know, when they first started doing it, we sat there. Solly, Danny Welbeck, Lallana, you know, they've all come through. The only ones you tend not to get a donkey because he's got other media commitments to do as a captain and things like that. But the players all come through and they would just sit and chat and they'll, you know, walk through, they'd sign stuff for you. But now, yeah, they've even had to put like a little corridor through there because it's just getting so popular. These, you know, the pressure there or the requirements on their time are great. So I think signings in the shop on Matchstand they're sort of superstars now, aren't they? And we're very lucky, and they are, every single one of them, and including, I have to say, you know, Bobby Sanchez the other day was absolutely lovely. He came through, he hadn't played, you know, so he's probably not in the best mood, if you've not played, but he came through with a smile on his face, had his selfie taken with some kids and people were signing stuff, and that was all very well. And then this guy wanted a picture taken with his wife. And so his wife stood there and he said to Sanchez, "Put your big hands up, mate." And everyone sort of went like, "Oh, no." And he goes, "Just take your picture." No, I want a picture with your big hands. Put your big hands up. He sort of thought, he's not a performing seal. He's been very charming and very polite with everybody. They took their photo and he walked off and he was a bit like, "Oh." And you just sort of thought, how these people don't get punched. Yeah, just what an awful human mental. Being. And Sanchez was, it was very polite and very, you know, but I can imagine when you've not played and you're not having your best day, having to deal with the general public must just be awful. So, but we can ask about signings and things like that. I don't know if you managed to get to the open training session, Joe, this year.
No,
they did one a couple of weeks ago. I didn't get there, but that was very good. And I think the players had a lot of time and Roberto had a lot of time for people, for photos, selfies, and had really great feedback about that. So I think it's probably time and place for those things. So we can ask the question, though.
Well, given the information you just given me, you'll probably see me getting kicked out tomorrow for asking every single squad member if they would be happy to come on the Albion Obsessed podcast. And I'll be saying, who the hell are you?
I do. You know, it's, you know, it, I tend, I feel a bit, you know, my kids go and get their selfies done, things like that. And I just like, you know, I sit there with a pint and just watch it all going on. And I just like watching them come through, actually. And the different body language, you know, Gilmore came through on the, was it Saturday or whatever day it was, Sunday. Yeah, and people just burst into applause, you know. And, you know, the guy, I've seen him in there a few times. Everyone's like, oh, I hope you get a game soon and good luck and keep training, you know. And to see him come in having a performance like that and everyone just sort of burst into applause and, you know, he walked through there a couple of feet tall and it was just lovely.
That's fantastic. It's really good to hear about those sort of interactions with the players because it makes them more human and it makes them more relatable as well. Yeah. Staying on the subject of fans, so Lemmy and Mikey ask, will there be more flags and TIFOs in the next season? I think we've pretty much already touched on that anyway.
Yeah, say, basically, bring your own. Go and do it, yeah. TIFO at Wembley, a couple of people commented about that. The problem we had, particularly for that, was to do something really intricate was going to be quite difficult because you didn't get the stadium handed over until about 6 a.m. in the morning because the semi had been on the previous day. So we did talk about doing the TIFO, but to do something that looked really nice and classy and good, was going to be very difficult to set out, which is why you'd end up with something that was either, you know, blue and white stripes and not the detail and not as nice as we'd like to have done it. And it kind of felt that those flags that they did with the dates on were probably a better memento. But if people want to do that stuff, you know, if they want to fundraise for it, if they want to do it, you know, do it. Get in touch. I'll help you do it. I'll talk to the club about the way to do it. Yeah, there's nothing stopping them, you know. And I think it would... I would much rather people coming together and doing their own thing. You know, you get a corner. I think it's really nice, the southwest corner at the Amex. I've got a real community going there. I don't know if you sort of follow them at all, if you're aware of them. But
you know, I used to be a part of it. I used to sit there.
There you go. So, you know, but they seem to have a really nice community together, really quite tight. And I think it's probably that fact it's a smaller area actually makes them a bit tighter and they all know each other and they're doing stuff to get their own flag. And I think that's great and that's how it should be, rather than a, you know, top down this bloke I've never met, you know, buying a flag that's the wrong colours and, you know, and doing that. So if those guys want to raise money for flags and TIFOs, you know, crack on and I'll help you any way I can.
This is an issue I've heard a little bit about. Of course, I'm not there, so it doesn't hit as close to home for me as it may for others. But Mike asks, where are the club in terms of charging for the park and ride?
So there's a review come out. And that's another one where, so we've been asked to be involved. And as a FAB, we got sight of the questionnaire beforehand and we gave quite a bit of feedback. So, yeah, well, one thing I said is, well, yeah, you can't ask someone about transport to the club unless you know what time kickoff it is. I'm going to behave very differently for a 1 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday to a 5 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday to an 8 o'clock kickoff on a Thursday. You know, I've got many different ways of getting to the ground. So you need to accept that there's, you know, there's different things. But then I think also, yeah, it costs the club quite a lot of money. Yeah, Paul Barber very cleverly on the first meeting, you know, clearly this was on his agenda and he wanted to talk about it because he sort of said, yeah, are you really telling me that you think as a club we should be funding Palace fans to travel from Hayward's Heath to the ground, which is what we do. You know, currently, all away fans within the travel zone get free transport. So Palace fans can buy a ticket from Crystal Palace or wherever they happen to live down to Hayward's Heath, and then the rest of it, they travel free on Brighton. Yeah, is that right? I don't know. So I think a review is probably necessary. It's costing the club a lot of money, and is that where they want to spend that money? I don't know. So it's under review. The survey's closed. The results are in. The club are doing the analysis and they're going to share that with us. But what that looks like, yeah, I don't know. I can't preempt it. But, you know, I guess looking from a FAB perspective, you have to think a bit wider than how you get to the ground. You know, so, okay, think about what other people do. So, you know, I'm part of the Seagulls over Burwash who travel by coach. when we first got the Amex, the travel subsidy that you got for the train or a bus used to be into private coaches. So we got a slightly reduced coach fee. Yeah, that got taken away quite early on because they're kind of like, why are we funding sort of private clubs? So I wonder how many people do use that travel subsidy. And then, you know, should you smear that across all of the fan base? You know, actually, if there's a need for trains or park or ride, you know, should that be more targeted? I don't know. But at the moment, I pay a travel subsidy that I probably use two games a year. Why am I paying that? Yeah, it would be my question to that, or could be. I think there's some elements around sustainable travel that we probably need to get right. And, you know, how we get people to from the ground in a safe and sustainable way is clearly quite important. But it's a question that does need asking. And yeah, I suppose the simple response is, well, the club are taking it away, the club are being greedy and things like that. Yeah, and that is one response. But I think, yeah, I would rather, in some ways, the money was spent on infrastructure. Yeah, make the platform longer. You know, if you were to spend 2 years worth of money to make the platform much better, such that getting trains to and from the ground was much better, rather than just paying it in diesel for park and ride for matches. So I think there's some conversations like that to be had. But until we get the results back, who knows? The next FAB members might be in place and we might be part of those conversations. But I think we can try and guide and inform and probe and challenge the club, but ultimately the decisions will be theirs to make. And I think this initial survey, I don't know if anything will change this time. It might just be part of, yeah, we're on a journey discussing it. And it might not always be there. So yeah, think about what you do. So
yeah, did that. Yeah, definitely.
I'm not sure I answer any of these questions. I talk quite a lot, and I hope that's
No, absolutely not. That's what podcasts are here for talking. So you're absolutely perfect, mate. The one thing I'm just going to touch on the train situation. If they were to ever take the subsidy, I can't say that word. If they took that away, I would love to see the train conductor trying to get through all of the fans on there, trying to check their tickets. Would be hilarious.
But yeah, at the same time, yeah, you get a hybrid on the train. The majority of people tap in and out, don't they? Yeah, you go to most London games, people. So I accept, you know, I agree, there is an argument that it'd be really difficult to get people. But you know, I wonder if maybe that should be slightly smaller, that zone. Hayward Heath is quite a long way away to me. Yeah. You know, I think it's... you should be able to get from the centre of Brighton to the ground much easier. And I think that should be where it's focused. I wonder if it's gone a bit high. One of the things we looked at as a fan advisory board was what other clubs were doing. So Magpies have got a Magpie Rover. So you pay £25 a year to the football club. In return for that, you get a travel card. And they obviously on any train, bus or tram in Newcastle on match day. So yeah, that's quite good. Yeah, so there's other stuff out there. So perhaps that's a halfway house. So yeah, we need to look at it certainly. And but bringing those other ideas in, because quite often the club are a bit blind to them. They don't always know about some of these things. So
true.
It's certainly some of the things we have been able to say, well, you know, did you know other clubs do this? Do you know about that? Can we do that? Yeah. So, and I think they are listening certainly. So, which is good.
Good stuff. Yeah, definitely work in progress on that one. So for the fans concerned about that, just keep an eye on the club socials and websites and look for further information on that one. It's a really important question. Well, I don't think so because I don't drink beer. Are we getting those Moretti self-pouring machines in the Upper West? That's from Jer.
Yeah, so I think they had them in Lower West, don't they? They tried them in the North. So it's part of the... the catering offering of trying to get, it's a very odd thing, isn't it? Football, before and then 15 minutes during the game, you suddenly got to try and pour as much beer down people's throats as you possibly can and serve as many pies. And then, you know, you don't say anything again for another 3 weeks because you've not got another home game. So anything that speeds that up has got to be a good thing. So I think they're on trial. They've been on trial at a number of grounds. So Aston Villa have got them. Brighton have got them and two or three other clubs have got them. And it's part of a trial. Does this work? And is it worth bringing more in? So I think watch this space. The catering guy is very good at it. He's one of these people he's got more answers than I've even got questions. And as you start to formulate the question, you know, he's just, because he's been doing it for his job for all his life, you know, he's 30 years in running event catering, and it's just fascinating guy to talk to. So, I mean, thank you. So, yeah, I think they're trialing those sorts of things as part of an offering to try and get, yeah, more beer to people that need beer.
This is perhaps a great closing, at least for this portion of our conversation. Louise says she just wants to say thank you for always being around and responding to questions. And I would echo those thanks from Louise, because as someone on Twitter, I've interacted with you before. I've been a fan of the club just a short time. I think the fact that you're putting yourself out there to have that level of engagement is, you know, reveals a lot of transparency in your role, and humanity in your role, which is really important. And, you know, you're one of us. And I think that shines through. And so that, you know, kudos.
Yeah, I have to say, Louise always, you sometimes get in some of these arguments on Twitter about things, and she's one of those people that always does say thank you and appreciate us and things like that. And it's just really lovely, actually. But you know, one of the things that I was quite happy to just put myself out there and say, look, I'm a member of the FAB, and the other members of the FAB aren't happy to do that. They want a FAB Twitter account, and they sort of want to tweet under that. But to me, that feels a bit anonymous, and well, who's saying that? Whereas just, you know, just be yourself. And I think that's one of the things, hopefully we might get some younger, not necessarily younger, but more socially media active members that can take some of the burden off of me arguing with people on Twitter. And, but, you know, also just share the ideas and be out there a bit more. So, yeah, but thank you, Louise. She does always say thank you and appreciate it. She's lovely. But, yeah, so many Brighton fans are lovely. I've met a handful of dickheads in my time, I have to say. And, you know, but yeah, 28,000 people in the stadium, you're going to have, aren't you? Genuinely, there's just really nice people. Yeah, we're all there for loving the same thing, aren't we? And we, yeah, for the most part, we do that in a quite well-behaved, well-mannered, well-spirited way. So, and it's just an honour to be part of that. So, yeah, absolutely.
100%. And I definitely echo that as well from Louise and from Dagan. So, yeah, fair play to you, Clive. It's one of those things that social media always strikes me as people have free reign to say whatever they want to whoever they want to say it to. But I just want to take this opportunity for anyone that is listening, if you are one of those handfuls of dickheads that Clive was talking about, that just to be kind, it's not that hard. It really isn't. We were going to talk a little bit about our run-in for European football, but we're at an hour and 12 minutes. So we've had a really good old chat about the Fan Advisory Board. I think it's probably about time we let you go and enjoy your evening, Clive. And we'll close the episode here. But if anyone's got any questions about the Fan Advisory Board, just shoot them across to Clive and be nice about it. Again, be nice. And we'll see you on the next one. So don't forget to hit the like button, subscribe for more Albion content, and we'll see you on the next one. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Excellent. Cheers.